Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know. Wherever you get podcasts.
At the car wash.
Anyone who's ever owned a car has used a car wash. And now labor organizers in Los Angeles are targeting car washes, claiming employee abuse and minimum wage violations. They're trying to unionize the car wash workers there in an effort that could potentially go national, but they're facing strong opposition from the industry, surprise, surprise. Plus, in a sector where most of the workers are immigrants and many are undocumented, workers are predictably afraid to organize for fear of losing their jobs. This focus on the car wash industry is part of a larger push by organized labor to target low-wage service jobs to increase union membership. So says Stephen Greenhouse, the labor and workplace correspondent for the New York Times, who wrote about this in yesterday's paper. He joins me now to talk about this recent labor news and to look ahead a little bit to how the labor movement's agenda will play into the midterm election. Stephen Greenhouse, welcome back to WNYC.
Nice to be here, Brian.
So what exactly is happening in L.A.?
In L.A., the state did a big study a few years ago and found that two-thirds, three-quarters of the state's car washes, even more in L.A., violate all sorts of minimum wage and overtime laws. Actually, there's a similar study in New York State finding the same thing. And in L.A., some professors at UCLA suggested, you know, we should really try to do something to improve the lot of the car wash workers. There are about 10,000 car wash workers in L.A. So they got the AFL-CIO and the United Steelworkers Union and lots of community groups involved in this joint effort to try to unionize car wash workers there. And it might be a long shot effort to unionize these folks because so many are undocumented and scared and because the owners are fighting so hard. But I think, you know, organized labor thinks it's worth the effort because many workers complain that they're paid just $35 for, you know, for a 10-hour day, $3.50 an hour, less than half the minimum wage. Some complain that they're not paid at all, that they only get tips. Several of the workers I interviewed said that they deal with these acids to clean tire rims and that they're not given gloves or goggles. And, you know, the workers I spoke to seem pretty eager to join the union, but it's not going to be easy because no car wash owner wants to be the first to allow in a union. So things are at a draw with tensions fairly high right now.
And your article says that probably two-thirds of the 500 car washes in L.A. violate workplace laws, according to California officials, which makes me wonder, do they need to organize into a union in order to enforce workplace safety laws and wage and hour laws that are already on the books?
That's a very good question, Brian. And when I spoke to the union organizers, they said, you know, we have two strategies. One is kind of the administrative regulatory strategy to get, you know, state and city officials to crack down on violations. But they say, you know, that's a good one-time fix. We might get this car wash there and that car wash there to clean up its act. But it's hard to use, you know, administrative fixes at all 500 car washes in Los Angeles. And they say, they argue that the advantage of a union is that you have a contract that the car washes, you know, are pledged to follow, and you have a union that will serve as a continual monitor. Whereas if you want state or city investigators to come in, you're lucky if you might get them once or twice a year to come in.
Now, this is taking place in L.A., and New York is not quite L.A. in terms of car culture, but there's still a gazillion cars here and lots of car washes. Do you know if the car wash industry here is similar to what you've described about working conditions in L.A.?
In many ways, it is. In preparation for the show, Brian, I dug up a story I wrote 2 years ago where the state labor commissioner ordered a big investigation of the state's 640 car washes, and that was M. Patricia Smith, and she found that the investigation found that 8 out of every car washes in New York City and nearly 1 out of 2 statewide violate minimum wage and overtime laws. And, you know, we all know that, you know, many of the workers in the city's car washes are immigrants, very possibly Many are undocumented. I've interviewed a few car wash workers in the city who say that, in slow hours when there aren't cars, coming to a car wash, maybe early in the morning, they're not even paid for those hours. They're only paid for hours when cars are coming to the wash. And as in California, many car wash workers complain that they're just paid about $4 an hour, $40 for a 10-hour day.
So do you think that what's happening in L.A. that you reported on is the beginning of a national unionization movement for that industry in particular, or in larger context, you note that unions are now targeting low-wage service workers as a source for growth, janitors, nursing home aides, security guards, a lot of people who we wouldn't have thought of as unionized in the past?
My sense, Brian, is if the unionization fight succeeds in L.A., and it's been going on for 2 years now, and they have yet to unionize a single car wash, although they've made major strides by getting the state and city to crack down on some law-violating car washes. But they're hoping that in the next few weeks and months they'll be able to unionize the first few, and that the dominoes might start falling. So if they succeed there, I can imagine they would look to other cities, and I would imagine that one of the first cities they look at is New York. Los Angeles is a little different from New York in that the union movement there works hand in glove extremely closely with immigrant advocate groups, and so I'm not surprised that they're doing this in L.A. rather than New York. The Central Labor Council in L.A. is extremely active and always fighting for immigrant workers, and you don't see nearly as much of that with the Central Labor Council here in New York.
What's the difference? I mean, from a purely political strategy standpoint, at least in terms of electoral politics, there may not be much advantage to bringing a lot of undocumented workers into the fold because they can't vote in elections. On the other hand, they can vote in union elections and they'll still pay dues.
Now, that's a tough problem that the labor movement faces. They say they're trying to do the right thing. They're organizing, a group they call very exploited workers, and they're not paying so much attention whether these workers are legal or undocumented. And they figure, everyone who works in the United States deserves to earn at least the minimum wage, if not better. And, one of the problems with organizing undocumented is that you could unionize 100 of them, and there might be, an immigration raid, and all of a sudden you lose 75 of them. But I think the union movement is looking longer term, and it figures if it can get union contracts in these car washes, that whoever works there is going to be working under better wages and better conditions.
Let me, while you're here, get your take on some of the 2010 midterm election politics as it pertains to unions, since you cover the union movement, and my guest is Stephen Greenhouse, who covers workplace and labor issues for the New York Times. Following the Citizens United decision that came down in the last session of the Supreme Court, we keep hearing about it as corporations can spend unlimited amounts on advertising and so forth during political campaigns, but so can unions. Are unions spending more in this midterm election because of this newfound freedom under Citizens United?
My sense, Brian, is unions are spending a little more. In the United States, corporations have a whole lot more money than unions. Probably 1,000 to 1, a million, in terms of potential spending. And unions, I think, already in the 2008 election were all in and spending, almost to their max. And I think some are planning to spend a little more in this election, but they say that they're going to emphasize, getting out the vote, distributing flyers at workplaces, knocking on people's doors. They say they're much more effective that way in getting union members to vote than in spending millions of dollars in ads.
How about the $50 billion infrastructure spending initiative that we talked about in our last segment? Is President Obama doing that to any degree as a gift to the unions who supported him so strongly in 2008?
As a gift, clearly the unions are happy about it. Clearly the unions are telling the president that if you want to mobilize, rally union members to vote for you, and not just union members, but unemployed and working people, you got to make the issue jobs, jobs, jobs. And I think the past month we've really seen an intensified focus by the president on jobs. First with the 23,000 billion-dollar package to help bail out cities and states to keep teachers and cops and firefighters. And now we see this $50 billion proposal on infrastructure funds. And unions are quite happy about all this, and whether it, and I think it will help mobilize union members.
Whatever happened to the so-called card check bill, the Employee Free Choice Act, allowing unions to organize in the workplace much more easily? This was going to be one of the top agenda items, at least for labor, coming into the new Democratic Congress with a Democratic president, but it hasn't happened.
No, it hasn't happened, Brian. Unions wanted very much for this bill to pass because it would require, only, as soon as 50% of the workers at a workplace signed cards saying they wanted a union, as soon as the majority signed cards, there'd be a union there, and that's a much easier way to do it. But the trick is, as we all know, you need 60 votes in the Senate to get anything passed, and there were never 60 votes in the Senate to pass this. At most, there were just 59 Democrats. First, it took a long time to get Franken sworn in, and then Ted Kennedy got sick, and they never reached the 60 mark. And once Scott Brown was elected in Massachusetts, the unions basically had to kiss this goodbye because they realized they couldn't get the 60.
All right. Stephen Greenhouse covers the labor movement and workplace issues generally for the New York Times. His article yesterday was about trying to organize car wash workers in L.A. Steve, thanks a lot.
You're very welcome, Brian. Nice to be here.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Coming up next, we will meet three more designers who contributed to our Map Your Moves data visualization challenge. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show right now to see these cool infographics about where New Yorkers move to and from. And we will talk about it with the designers in a minute.